Calling you by your full name was just a waste of time. Gian Giacomo Poldi Pezzoli d'Albertone. You are more pragmatic and simply signed off as Giacomo Poldi. You weren't looking to be noble through your father's surname. In the end, what was so noble about your father's deeds? Not much. Maybe nothing. At 50, he had found himself the sole heir to a title and immoderate wealth left by his uncle, Giuseppe Pezzoli d'Albertone, a tax collector for Maria Theresa of Austria. Lots of money and a palace on Corsia del Giardino, Milan's noblest street in those days. A fine catch in spite of himself, your father finally looked for a wife and a more solid coat of arms, marrying a very young descendant of the Trivulzio family, a lineage of the city's historic aristocracy. Poor Rosina, just 18, 32 years his junior, with a husband as old as her father. But as we know, that's how things were back then. In the end, you had few ties with your father. He died when you were still a boy. He didn't bring you up. You were named Gian Giacomo after your maternal grandfather, an intellectual, a Dante scholar and art collector. Your mother selected the finest tutors available in the city to raise you with aristocratic and liberal ideals. Classical studies, of course, but also medieval, with a vivid accent on contemporary history. Because you knew, you felt, that everything was changing and you were in the eye of the storm. The history of the nation was moving and you wanted to be part of it. You were young and waiting to inherit, with the age of majority, 5 million Austrian lire, an unthinkable figure even back then. Young and a bit on the loose, not ready to settle down. Your mother had to smooth over the liberties you took with a maid servant, or hush up the rumours that spread about you and Cora, a woman not suited to your rank, or you and Eleuteria, a protege of your cousin Cristina Belgioioso, the feminine glory of the national resurgence. After all, you were never married, just sporadic flings with actresses or dancers, no steady ties. Other than the clandestine relationship with Giuseppina Parravicini, the second wife of Francesco Cavezzali, who lived on Via Bigli, a few steps from your house. Your affection for Camilla, their daughter, raised plenty of eyebrows. Since you couldn't acknowledge her as yours, she became your pupil, lavished with attention on your part, ever since she had been wrapped up in her baptismal gown, the same one worn during the next century by Camilla Cederna, a direct descendant of your Camilla. You left your pupil a true fortune, and she, with comparable affection, returned the favour at the end of her days, when you were just a memory, donating the things she had collected during her life to the museum that bears your name. Which was your true, authentic offspring, after the amorous passions of youth and, above all, the tumult of political passions. You joined the Circolo dell'Unione when you were just 19 years old, when it was located in Contrada San Giuseppe. Today that street is called Via Verdi, in honour of another great adopted Milanese. The Circolo moved shortly thereafter above Café Cova, near your palace. It was a refuge of fervent patriots, a place to weave anti-Austrian plots. Closed down on the night between 4th and 5th January 1848 by the police, aware that you had been the ones to organise the smoke boycott when for days the people of Milan stopped buying tobacco and gambling products to choke off the income gained by the Austrians. It was all very well to resent the foreigners' repressive boot, but touching the finances was worse than any insult. The indecorous reaction to that peaceful protest caused the first deaths in the city, leading up to the 5 days of Milan, the real uprising that drove the Austrians from the city. You generously financed the rebellion, and your house became the headquarters of the subsistence committee. When Marshal Radetzky made his return, armed to the teeth, he got even by levying an outrageous fine, 600,000 Austrian lire, and confiscating your palace, which was used as a military barracks. You wandered in exile for a couple of years, Lugano, Paris, London, then drifting back ever closer to home by way of Florence, still with your mother, who continued to teach you about art and beautiful things, and finally back to Milan after paying the penalty. Everything changed. Yours was a refined political strategy, unassailable. If active politics could no longer be your field of action, you decided to focus on cultural policy. You paid, it is true, and you raised the ante, doubling the size of your property, constructing its twin, its mirror image. I am back, and I'm bigger than I was before. On the terrace, connecting the two volumes, you placed the enormous cultural group of Lorenzo Bartolini, inherited from Rosina, as a symbol of the richness of what could be found by entering your home, the free port of Milanese culture. A bronze copy of the sculpture is still there for all to see. It was immediately a territorial market, featured in every guide of the Grand Tour. A hinge that looked towards the street and could be seen from beyond the inner garden towards the home of Alessandro Manzoni, author of the novel that established the national identity. Your project was clear and irrepressible. You subsidized the first exhibition of Brera in 1851, after it had been suppressed for years by the Austrians. It was necessary to start over again from art. You knew, you were aware that a people without a country can recognize its history, its glory, in art. You had known the world, it is true, but you didn't need to travel far and wide to find what you needed. Milan, in those years, was the center of the most important art and antiques market in Europe. If something was to be purchased, one did it here. Carpets, tapestries, ceramics, furniture, sculptures, paintings. Everything. Your peers were selling off family holdings to conserve their way of living. You bought. You were not interested in socializing, and you often generously granted your box at La Scala to friends. You could be seen in Brera, on the other hand, at the Accademia, or in the studio of Giuseppe Molteni, your dear friend, a painter and antiquarian. We can imagine the rage amongst the Austrian elite. What the devil does that Paul di Pezzoli have in mind? Why are museum directors from all over Europe flocking to pay him homage? You offered no reply. Instead, you talked things over with cabinet makers, blacksmiths, ceramists, painters, upholsterers. Your collection, with its precise aims, grew day by day. Works from the Middle Ages, the Renaissance, the Baroque. Names that were already milestones of Italian art. Piero, Perugino, Botticelli, Pollaiolo, Mantegna, Tiepolo. Not simply masterpieces, not simply the collection of an aristocratic. You are an intellectual, not a wealthy eccentric. The new nation, the one beating in your heart, had to know about its artistic glories and to stimulate young talents. In art, but also in science and crafts. That is what your home was becoming. The laboratory of taste of a nation. You loved Dante, as did Mazzini and all the patriots of the Risorgimento, as the father of the language, of course, a great poet, certainly, but also an exile in search of a homeland, the same one you were searching for. In 1851, for the first universal exposition, that of the Crystal Palace of Paxton, keystone of modernity, the young Giuseppe Bertini made a monumental window, a feat of Lombard technical prowess, entitled The Triumph of Dante. It was a great success, winning first prize. Art, crafts, and patriotic ideology bonded together. You were there, and you wanted it for your little cabinet, your study, and Bertini made you a replica. Then you had a bronze grate made to divide the studio from the rest of the house, imitating the medieval bronzes of the Trivulzio Candelabrum in the cathedral for centuries. You had the walls adorned by plasterers, painters, and decorators, creating something that was no longer an imitation of the Lombard Middle Ages, but practically a work of Art Deco before its time. Your project was clear. Literature, opera, technology, the intelligence of the hands of craftsmen and artists represented the human capital on which to base political opposition and the identity of the nascent Italy. Your house had to become a pedagogical museum, a compendium of reference for the people of Milan, a place in which to admire beauty, to study techniques, to learn in order to reproduce, spread, and invent. You knew this without regrets. At the age of 39, you had already made your will. I hereby order that the apartment in which I live, in the wing between the garden and the two courtyards of my palace at Via del Giardino 12, with the armory, the paintings, the artworks, the library, and the furnishings of artistic value located there at the time of my death, be made into an artistic foundation for public use and benefit in perpetuity under the same regulations applied for the Brera Art Gallery. This was written, and from that time on, any artist and artisan of Milan could enter, free of charge, to admire and study, to perpetuate our national identity through creative genius. Many years later, the cruelty of World War II devastated the decorated rooms in your palace. A firebomb destroyed the painstaking efforts of antique and modern talents. But the collection, your collection and ours, was saved, together with your little study, which remained intact, which we can still admire, moved. The cabinet where you wrote your will, where you died of a heart attack, a cruel fate, 2 years before the museum, your most beloved creation, was opened to the world.